Welcome to the Retro Odyssey Podcast. I'm Steven, and with me as always is Matt. How's it going, Matt?
Hello, how are you? I'm okay.
I am sick. We managed to get COVID again over here. This time I got it, so that's why I sound a little off.
Yeah, that sucks. It's probably going to get everyone at some point.
Yeah, especially with the kind of response it's had with a lot of people here. But anyway, how have things been for you?
Not too bad. I had 2 weeks off work, went on holiday to the coast, just generally relaxing for a bit, playing games, watching films, just enjoying not being at work for a bit.
Oh, that sounds nice.
I always try and get 2 weeks off together at least once a year.
Mm-hmm.
Just to kind of like de-stress.
Yeah, usually my wife and I try to take a week off and then save our second. Well, I get 2 weeks, she gets more, but I try to save my second week to spread out throughout the year. But we usually try to take a week off to either go to the mountains or go somewhere.
Do you only get 2 weeks off a year in the U.S. then?
There's no like standard across the board for time off. My company starts people at 2 weeks, and then I think when you've been there for 3 years, you get another week. Amber, her job gives, like, she gets a certain amount of PTO every check, and it continues to accumulate, and she can transfer it from year to year. So, you know, I think right now she's got like 100 hours of PTO.
All right, it works. Yeah, it works differently over here. We have kind of like mandatory holiday time.
Yeah, we don't have that. Any paid time off we get is purely off the generosity of our employer.
Mm. That's why you want them unions.
Yeah, that would be nice. So what all have you been playing? I mean, I know one thing.
Pretty much all been Final Fantasy 14, obviously, as usual. I kind of like set myself the goal of completing all of the side quests in the game. There's a lot. All I have left is the Hildebrand questline, which is it's kind of like a comedy side quest line that carries on throughout like multiple expansions. I've done the base game Hildebrand quests, but I've not done any of the expansion ones yet. But aside from that, I've done like all of the side quests in the game, which took a really long time because there's a hell of a lot.
Yeah, I was doing a lot of the side quests when I first started, and then I just stopped and I figured I would save them for when I was leveling up other jobs. I think I've also just done the base game Hildebrand. I don't think I've done any of the other stuff.
Yeah, well the new expansions, the latest patch just added like another load of Hildebrand stuff. So I thought it was finally time to actually get caught up on that and actually play through the new stuff.
Yeah.
Plus each expansion, you get kind of like these special weapons that you build up over the course of the expansion and get more powerful and stuff like that. And for some reason, this time they're tied to the Hildebrand questline. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I saw some people talking about those weapons and Hildebrand. I was like, those don't have anything to do with each other, do they?
I don't know why they're behind Hildebrand this time, but they are for some reason.
I know they're popular with a lot of players, but I know some people find them annoying.
Yeah, I guess it is kind of like it's a certain style of humor that works for some people and probably doesn't work for others.
Mm-hmm.
Which, spoiler alert, I kind of have a similar thought about one of the games that we're going to be talking about later on. But you know, it is kind of like a lighthearted, just fun romp. I mean, at the end of the day, it's optional content. You don't have to do it, but it's there, and there are like some trials locked behind it, and obviously this time there are weapons behind it, so maybe it's a little less optional. Even though, I mean, it is still 100% optional, but if you want those weapons, you're gonna have to go through it. But yeah, I've mostly been playing that, and other than that, it's just been Vampire Survivors. Which since we last spoke, we've had like another couple updates, bunch more new characters, bunch more secret characters, a hell of a lot of fun. Like the most recent character lobs furniture around the room, that can like hit all the enemies and stuff like that, which is interesting. And the secret character added in the latest patch is a tree that that can't move.
I did hear about the tree.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with baseline stats, it can't move. If you put upgrade points into movement, and if you get like the wings pick up on the stage, then you can move slowly. But you're not going anywhere particularly fast with this tree. But it continues to be a fantastic game and kind of like excellent value for money. And even though, I mean, we're kind of like nearing the end of the roadmap for the updates before like the 1.0 version, but there's nothing to say it won't continue to be updated after that.
Yeah, I feel like they're going to keep working on it and keep trying to make it better. I sincerely hope they increase the price when it goes into 1.0.
Yeah, I'm very surprised it's still the price it is now. But with it being added to Game Pass, shortly, maybe that will kind of like happen at the same time as kind of like price increase. I don't know.
Well, I don't know.
But it's something I'd like to see on consoles as well, because I mean, there's literally kind of like four buttons, well, five buttons. It's nothing that a modern console can't handle. Switch may struggle with it, but I'm sure the modern consoles would be fine with it.
Yeah. It would be a shame if the Switch struggled with it because it works great on Steam Deck, so it's one that would probably do well on Switch.
Yeah, it would be nice to get it on handheld, but I mean, I know for a fact, like late into a run, when you've got a lot of shit popping off, it can slow down quite a bit.
Yeah, and the Switch already has issues with that, so.
But every single time a new update comes along, we get kind of like new achievements, new unlocks, and I usually just sit down for a couple hours, just knock them out, so I've got like all the unlocks, all the achievements. And I'm always looking forward to kind of like when new updates come and try and knock out the achievements and stuff like that. And there should be an update coming soon, within the next few weeks or so.
Okay. I've got most of the things unlocked. There's still a few things I need to do, but I've been playing a lot of other stuff. So it's kind of taken a back seat.
Yeah, what else have you been playing?
So I'm still doing a lot of Mass Effect. I'm playing a lot of Mass Effect 3, working on getting those trophies. I've gone back and started working on Assassin's Creed again. I got through Revelations and I've started Assassin's Creed 3. I'm probably about halfway through that. I went back to Final Fantasy 14, did some more of Shadowbringers. I think I'm close to the end because they're saying in the cutscenes that all that's left is to go to the city and get the big guy. So I think I'm close to the end of that.
Kind of.
Yeah, I'm definitely past the halfway point.
Yeah, I mean, bear in mind there's like the patch content as well.
Well, yeah, there's also the
Yeah.
patch stuff, but let's see what else. I mean, I've played a little bit of Vampire Survivors. I haven't started it yet, but I've ordered a copy of Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle because the new one is coming out at the end, I think in October. So it's probably high time I get around to this game that I was super hyped for and just never managed to get a copy of. So that's on the way, but I haven't started it yet. I've been playing some Stranger of Paradise, which I don't know if we talked about last time or not.
I think we did briefly.
Okay. So, I mean, I'll just say I love the game. Like it's a lot of fun. It has a really satisfying gameplay loop because I mean, I was just running around redoing missions to get more stuff and was still having fun. So it's a great game. I'm looking forward to where the story goes with it. I mean,
Yeah,
that's all.
and there's an expansion coming out soon as well.
Yeah, there's DLC coming out. So I'm excited to see what happens. That's really all I have to say. I think that's it.
Yeah, cool. I mean, that's all we've been playing. I mean, we've got like a little bit of news if you want to delve into that.
Yeah, we can go into that. I know there's not a lot going on right now.
No, the only major thing that I found really is well, there are a couple of things really, but Sega revealed that they're bringing out another Mega Drive Mini, like a second one,
Is it going to look
and
like the second Mega Drive?
yes, it is actually.
Oh, okay, so at least they didn't miss that.
Yeah, it's looking at the same. It looks generally kind of like the second one. And it has like a little CD attachment to it as well, which as far as I'm aware is like just cosmetic, but it's a nice little touch. Because I have like my Mega Drive is like a Mega Drive 2 and it's got that same CD attachment on it. So it's nice to see. But I mean, I don't think all of the games have been revealed yet, but I'll talk about the ones that have been revealed because this does actually include Mega CD games as well as Mega
Okay.
Drive games. Probably the reason they've added that cosmetic thing on it. You've got Sylphide, you've got Shining Force CD, Sonic CD, Mansion of Hidden Souls, which is pretty decent point and click. Well, not really point and click. It's kind of, well, I mean, I guess it is kind of in a way. It's a weird game. It's a weird game anyway. Pop 4 Male, Virtua Racing, Bonanza Brothers, Shining in the Darkness, Thunder Force 4, which is a very good shooter, Magical Taro Ruto, and Fantasy Zone, which is a port. It says here Mega Drive port. I mean, it was a Master System game. I wasn't aware that it actually came out for Mega Drive. It might have done, but it just for some reason it just says Mega Drive port here. But yeah, that is coming out at the end of October in Japan. They've not given any information about kind of like a Western release yet, but I would be surprised if this remained Japan only.
Yeah. I mean the small console thing is popular enough that I'm sure we'll see it out this way.
Yeah, but I mean, people who already own the original, and did a little bit of tinkering with it probably already have most of these games on there already anyway.
Yeah.
But still, it's an interesting little item. I probably won't pick it up for the same reason that I didn't pick up the first one. Just I have a lot of these games already on a lot of compilations and stuff.
Yeah.
But still, it's nice to see. The only other thing I've got news-wise is a Pac-Man World repack is coming to Switch, and it's kind of like a I don't know if it's kind of like a remake or a brand new game. I'm assuming from the name repack that it's a remake. Oh, it is. It is. Yeah. So it's a remake of the PS1 game, and from the trailer, it looks really nice. There's a real nice collector edition with it, which has got like a statue, stuff like that. It's coming out for everything, basically all the major consoles. I do actually have Pac-Man World on PS1, and I can never really get into it. So this isn't really my kind of thing personally, but that is coming out at the end of next month.
Yeah, I'm kind of a casual at best enjoyer of Pac-Man, so probably not something I'll worry about picking up.
Yeah, Pac-Man World is kind of like a deviation because it's a platformer rather than like a maze game.
Yeah.
But not a very good one in my opinion. But yeah, that's pretty much all we have for the news. And also there's not a lot of releases really this month. The only release, like retro release that I could find, is the Klonoa Fantasy Reverie series, which is a remastered collection of the PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2 Klonoa games. So you have Klonoa Door to Phantom Isle, I believe it's called, and that was the PS1 game, and you have Klonoa 2 Lunatea's Veil, which is the second one. Now, I have never played the PS1 game, but I have played quite a lot of the PS2 game, and it's really, really good. It's kind of like a 2.5D platformer. You're moving in kind of like a 2D plane, but your background's all 3D and you can go backwards and forwards, stuff like that. It's a really, really fun platformer. Like I said, I've not played the original, but the sequel is really, really good.
Yeah, I haven't played either of them, so that's I've heard a lot of good things about Klonoa.
So this is one that I might actually pick up. That's coming out on July the 8th for Switch, but it's coming to PlayStation, Xbox, and PC at a later date, which they haven't announced yet. And that's really the only July releases that we've got, to be honest.
Okay. Well, I mean, if that's all we got, then I guess we'll just take a quick break and move on to our topic for this episode.
Okay.
So our theme for this month is a publisher special, although there was a lot of development there too. It is Lucasfilm Games, formerly known as LucasArts. I think that's probably what they were known for, I mean, most of the time that I've been playing video games. So they were founded in 1982 by George Lucas. He wanted to explore other areas of entertainment rather than just the movies. And one of the interesting notes is that the graphics department of the Lucasfilm Computer Division, as it was called, eventually became Pixar, which, is an interesting tidbit that, doesn't mean a whole lot, but it's kind of cool. They started out making, I think what they were best known for in the early days was their point and click adventure games. They did I know one of their earliest ones was Labyrinth, based on the film. And then they had Maniac Mansion, which was a big one. They had a few based on Indiana Jones. They had Loom, and the one of the big ones was The Secret of Monkey Island. And you know, as time went on, they made more of them. They were basically going head to head with Sierra. And I think in 92, they started making Star Wars games, and those became really popular. And at a certain point, they were almost exclusively making Star Wars games. And then later on, they came back and made some more adventure games. They re-released Monkey Island. There's a lot of titles that they've worked on. And I know, like, some people will only know them for the adventure games. Some people will only know them for the Star Wars. So it's one of those companies that a lot of people have fond memories of for different reasons, which is always nice.
I mean, I think it's fair to say that kind of like the bulk of their catalog is adventure games, though, because you have all the early ones, and then they still continued later on with like Sam and Max and Grim Fandango and stuff like that, which were all really popular as well. So I think the majority of their games have been adventure games based on the Scum engine, which was made for Maniac Mansion. Scum stands for Script Creation Utility for Maniac Mansion. And most of their adventure games were built on an iteration of that engine. And if you speak to adventure game fans about Scum, they're going to know exactly what that is. And I think modern systems had trouble playing them until a Scum emulator came out, like probably about 10 odd years ago, 10, 15 years ago. And since then, we've seen re-releases of like all these old games that use this Scum engine, like playing absolutely perfectly on modern systems.
Yeah. Well, and one of the first ones they did was Secret of Monkey Island Special Edition on Xbox 360. And that they upgraded the visuals, and we'll get into that. But I still think they're probably about half and half at this point, just because there was so much made around Star Wars. It might be a little bit tipped more towards adventure, but I think it's closer to 50-50 than either one of us realizes.
Were games like Jedi Academy and Knights of the Old Republic published by them?
Yes.
Because because I know EA currently has the publishing rights.
So the Dark Forces Jedi Knight series was all LucasArts. Knights of the Old Republic was all LucasArts. I'm not sure if they're involved with the Old Republic, but The Force Unleashed, I mean, there's, you know, basically any Star Wars game prior to EA getting the license and releasing Star Wars Battlefront is LucasArts.
Yeah.
Even the ones nobody likes to talk about, like Super Bombad Racing, which was terrible. But so it's, like I said, I think it's probably about 50-50, but, To highlight that, we're going to talk about one Star Wars game and one adventure game. So the first game we're going to talk about is, fittingly enough, The Secret of Monkey Island. It was originally released in 1990. I will say that I played the 2009 remake, the Monkey Island Special Edition, on Xbox 360. Had you played this one before now?
No, I hadn't. I had heard of it. I mean, everyone's heard of it.
Yeah, everyone's heard of it.
But no, I'd never played it before. I also played the special edition, which I got on PC.
Okay. So I mean, like you said, everyone's heard about this game. I knew about this game for a long time. My family actually had the original Secret of Monkey Island. And I know I played it, like I know I at least started it, because when I started playing the special edition, there were scenes that I remembered happening. So I know I've started it. I know I started it on the original, didn't get very far. And because I remember the voice acting, I remember I started the special edition at least once before now. But this is the first time I've actually gotten anywhere with the game. I mean, I got to part two, I think. And it was definitely enough to kind of get the gist. Because if any of the listeners have played point and click adventure games, they're gonna know how this goes. One of the big things, and this was actually a design mandate, was they made it so that the main character couldn't die except in one specific instance that you had to really try for. Because
even that was a fake out. There is one point where you can fall off a cliff and it'll say kind of like, oops, you seem to have died, like press restart. And he just bounces back up and said, oh, we landed on a rubber tree.
Yeah. Well, no, I was thinking of the there's a point where you're underwater, and if you stay down there for 10 minutes, you can drown. But you have to really try for that.
Oh, yeah. I can't imagine that section taking you 10 minutes to get through.
Yeah. So it was actually the creator, Ron Gilbert, who was frustrated with a lot of Sierra's games where any time you did something wrong, you died. And he didn't like that. So he wanted to specifically avoid that when he made his games. He applied some of those ideas to Maniac Mansion, but he also has said that he made some mistakes making that, which one of the things he pointed out is dead-in situations that prevented the player from completing the game, which we did run into when we played it. But his goal with Monkey Island was to focus the game on exploration, which I think they did. And I mean, I personally enjoyed it. I think there's a few times when it can grate, like if you're having to go through the same dialogue multiple times because you haven't figured it out yet, or if just working through options to get to something. So I can see how that would grate on somebody. But again, that's also, you know, partially on voice acting and therefore only applicable to the special edition. But what did you think of it?
I'm generally not into point and click games. Like it's really not my kind of thing. But I did play through this. I finished it as well with heavy use of a guide because there are some really obtuse puzzles.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was enjoyable to play through. I did like the UI improvements that came with the special edition. I mean, I've seen footage of the original, and it is still perfectly playable, the original, but I liked how you could like right click to like do one context sensitive thing, left click to do another, you know, it just made it a little bit easier. I think the voice acting added quite a lot to it. I mean, having the original game be kind of like non-voiced kind of feels like you'd be missing something having played this, because the voice acting is quality. And yeah. I think it definitely adds to the game having it there. Like I said, there are some like really obtuse puzzles, and I was frustrated quite a lot. Because I really didn't want to have to like resort to a guide, but certain sections just I wouldn't have figured it out. Like I wouldn't have figured out that there's like a file in the carrot cake that you've got to use the carrot cake to get out, and you've got to feed a monkey a certain amount of bananas to get him to swing on a certain branch, and it's stuff that you would figure out eventually if you'd bought this and this was like your main game that you were playing.
Right.
But the game as a whole, I found enjoyable. Probably not enjoyable enough that I would play the sequels. But it's decent enough. The humor, I felt, was kind of subjective. It didn't really make me laugh. I mean, I think it's more about quirky characters than humorous situations.
Right, it's less one-liners and more, you know, look at this weirdo.
Yeah. Yeah, like all of the different characters have like these quirks, and it's just not really my kind of humor. But there were still a few places, like towards the end of the game. I mean, I'm paraphrasing here because it's been a few weeks since I finished it, but one of the characters says to you kind of like, what have you learned from this experience? And one of the options you can say is never pay more than £20 for a computer game, which I thought that was the one line that actually made me laugh in the game. But like, there are humorous moments sprinkled throughout, and you're going to find this hilarious or ho-hum, depending on who you are, really.
That's actually even funnier for me, because I have gotten all of the Monkey Island games free.
Yeah.
Whether through Xbox Live Gold or Amazon Games, I've gotten them all for free.
Yeah, I think Prime Gaming did give away the whole lot about a year ago, didn't they?
Yeah. And even, I think I missed that, but still, they've given them away individually to where I've gotten them all. And I do think I have a physical copy, an original CD of Curse of Monkey Island floating around somewhere. But I really enjoyed it. The one of the things about the special edition that I thought was invaluable was the hint system, where if you're stuck, you can hold X on the controller and it'll give you a hint about what you need to do next. And if you do it again immediately, it'll give you a more in-depth hint about what you need to do next. And if you do it a third time, it'll just give you an arrow and say, go here and do this.
Is that in the PC version? I didn't notice that at all.
It should be, because it's mentioned as being part of the special edition.
I did not know that was there.
Yeah. Like that's the only way I got through some of it. I did have the idea of opening the cake because it made a comment about it being heavy, but that's because that's cultural osmosis, the file in the cake thing. It's like, wait a minute. But yeah, like you say, the voice acting adds something. I think there's people that have said that it's hard to go back to the original because of how good the voice work is for it. But yeah, I mean, I had the opposite reaction. You know, when I played this, I was immediately like, oh man, I need to finish this and then play the other one since I have them. And I mean, you know, it's entirely possible that I wouldn't enjoy it as much if I had played the original version without the voice acting, without the hint system. But I do think there's enough here that I still could have enjoyed the original if I had played it back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you've seen kind of like footage of the original. I mean, there's a couple different versions. They brought out like an EGA version first, and then a VGA version later on, with like updated graphics. But if you look back at some of their earlier EGA games, like Maniac Mansion and like, I think, some of the early Indiana Jones games,
mm-hmm.
It's all about kind of like solid blocks of color, which the artists didn't really like, but it's kind of like what they had to work with.
Right.
And for Secret of Monkey Island, art designers kind of like, he decided that he would like use like dithering to create kind of like gradients of color and stuff like that, rather than just like solid blocks of color, because the EGA like graphics thing, it only has like 16 colors and none of them particularly good. But if you use dithering and just kind of like have like certain pixels and kind of like color gradients to create like a more expressive kind of like detailed image, you can do some really, really decent stuff with it. And that's basically what they did. The guy who does the backgrounds actually has an interesting story where he made one of the backgrounds using this dithering, but was told basically dithering doesn't compress, so you can't really use it in the game. But he left this image that he'd made with dithering on his computer screen, went out to lunch, and when he came back, the head of the studio was talking to like some of the other designers, saying like, why can't dithering be compressed? And a week later, dithering was added to the engine. They were able to like compress it in the engine. They like built that in because he just left that on his computer screen for people to look at, like over lunch. And if you look at some of those EGA screenshots, it really, really does look really good. Like people thought that it was a VGA game when it first came out, because like no companies were using VGA at the time, no game companies were using it, and it just looked so good and so much better than what people were kind of like used to from that kind of thing, that that was one of the big selling points of the game, like how good it looked using these EGA graphics. And it did get a VGA version as well, which updated the graphics even more. But personally, I prefer those graphics to the remake's graphics.
I can see that.
I think if there was some way to get the voice acting into like the VGA version or the EGA version, then that for me would be like the perfect marriage. I mean, it's not really possible because some of the voice lines were changed when like the special edition came out. So it's not kind of like a one-to-one script to the original. But yeah, I think if there was a way to do that, that would kind of like be the definitive edition for me. Those old graphics with the new voice lines.
Yeah, I can definitely like I've seen the original graphics, and I definitely there is definitely a charm to it. The new one, I could see how someone would think those backgrounds are over-designed, but I know I read that there's a ability to switch between the new visuals and the old visuals in the special edition, but I think that also takes the voice work out. But I don't know. I didn't even know that function was in there until I read it
No,
today.
I was unaware of that.
So that might be something to check out. But yeah, I mean, it's I think you hit the nail on the head that it's either you're gonna find this brilliant or you're gonna find this just okay. I think it's still like the game itself is still quality. I think there is because so I didn't play a whole lot of adventure games growing up, but I've always heard the stories about, oh, you know, adventure games had all these wacky solutions. It's like, you know, oh, the all these crazy things you have to do. Everything here seemed pretty logical. There were a few moments like when the, you know, when he talks to the governor for the second time and they're suddenly fawning over each other. I'm like, really? But I think most of the puzzle solutions were logical. It's just, you know, you have to be thinking a certain way and you have to be ready for that line of thinking. And even then, sometimes it, you know, that I had to use that hint system.
There is one particular scene that I did want to talk about that I thought was kind of genius. When you first go into the governor's mansion, the game completely takes away control from you.
Yeah.
And all you're seeing is kind of like text on what your character's choosing and what they're using it on.
Yeah, you're seeing action prompts.
Yeah, because you're kind of like behind a wall, so you can't see what you're doing. You can just hear like sound effects, and you can see what the guy's doing, and it's difficult to explain.
It's like, you know, you use mousetrap on rhinoceros. It's not effective.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a... To me, that was a brilliantly done section, especially because in the process of that sequence back there, you see, you know, pick up gopher repellent, and then you still have that after the sequence is over, and that's the answer to another puzzle.
Yeah.
So I thought that section was brilliantly done, and it's one of those things that's you can tell it's definitely from a game that was limited in what they could do, because there's all this wacky stuff going on, but they're not showing any of it. But yeah, I agree that was a good scene. I did see when I was reading up, there's apparently a joke in the original version, where you look at a tree stump and he says, oh, it's an opening to a system of catacombs, and then you get a message saying that you need to insert disc 22, then disc 36, then disc 114 in order to continue. And apparently a lot of people didn't get the joke, so they removed it from the future versions of the game.
I mean, it did come on a lot of discs. Like, I know the Amiga version had 8 discs.
I don't remember. It may be that my family had a later version of it, but like, I only remember the one disc.
Did you have like the CD version?
I think it was a CD.
Oh yeah, I'm talking about the floppy disk version.
Okay. That would make more sense, because like, I remember the CD sleeve, and I distinctly remember the artwork. And it's the artwork, you know, that pops up when you pull up the game. But like, I only remember one disc, so
yeah. That cover art, by the way, is fantastic.
Oh yeah, it's incredible, and I like it. So the remake's cover art is slightly updated for the new graphics. I think I like the original art a little better. But it's still a really solid image, regardless. I mean, I think most of the artwork was good for these, like the at least the cover arts.
It had to be back in the day, because
yeah,
that's how you sold your game.
Yeah,
there weren't online reviews or anything like that. You had to grab people with your cover art.
And I mean, even getting into the later ones, like Curse of Monkey Island and Escape from Monkey Island, those still have pretty, pretty good art to work with. Probably just because at that point they had a tradition of good art and they wanted to keep that up.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, like, I like it. I think, you know, there's still something to enjoy, even if, you know, even if the humor isn't for you, even if the puzzles are a little obtuse, I think there's still something most people could get out of this game.
Yeah, definitely.
If you've got a way to check it out for free, absolutely do that. Like, if you picked it up from Xbox Live Gold and never played it, or if you've picked it up through Amazon and never played it, at least check it out.
Yeah, I mean, plus it's really, really cheap on GOG as well.
Oh, yeah.
Live to PC.
I think this one's worth checking out. And if we don't have anything else, we could take a quick break and move on to the next game.
Okay, can do.
So the next game, or I suppose games, we're going to talk about is LEGO Star Wars, representing the Star Wars part of the program. So for this one, I played Lego Star Wars The Complete Saga. And I think you played Lego Star Wars 2, the original trilogy?
I did, yes, on PlayStation 2.
Because I have both The Complete Saga and Lego Star Wars 3. But, I mean, I've played the original versions of the games as well. I even played a little bit of the GBA version of the first Lego Star Wars because I remembered playing it a lot as a kid. And it was weirdly compelling. But yeah, so the Lego Star Wars, I think, was actually the first... I think it wasn't the first Lego game, but I think it was the first of this style of Lego game.
Yeah.
And then, of course, now the format has changed even more to include voice acting and be a lot more of a direct adaptation. But what these did was these basically told the story of the Star Wars movies through non-voiced cutscenes with Lego figures. And like I found it charming. I know a lot of other people really enjoyed it. I've been playing these games for a long time, and I've really enjoyed all the time some of them. What did you think? Because I know you hadn't played this nearly as much as I have.
No, well, this is my first experience with one of the Lego games.
Okay.
I know they're pretty much ubiquitous at the minute, and like every franchise has got a Lego game, but I had never really like gone into them before. Mm. But I played this on PlayStation 2, which it actually has, is one of the few PS2 games that has a widescreen option, so I was like grateful for that. Mm-hmm. And my first impression was the game plonked me into the cantina and didn't tell me what to do at all. Didn't tell me what these little dot Lego things on the floor were. Didn't tell me what gold bricks were, red bricks were. It didn't tell me where I needed to go or do or anything. So that was kind of like my first impression, which wasn't great. But I eventually did figure it out, and I went into kind of like episode 4, because this one contains episode 4, 5, and 6. Mm-hmm. And I found like the combat and kind of like general exploration and stuff like that quite fun. I like the cutscenes as well. I think it is kind of like nice reproductions of what's in the films, but there's a lot of things in the game that it doesn't tell you that I think you need to know. Like, I got stuck so many times, like because I didn't know that a certain object could be blown up, or I couldn't work out where I needed to go. The Death Star is like a maze. And it led to me being frustrated quite a bit. Like when you get this kind of like a mini boss fight before you get the Millennium Falcon, and the Millennium Falcon is like there, like right in the middle of the screen. All the enemies are gone. Don't know what to do. There's like a tiny entrance at the side, which you can barely see, that you've got to walk into. And I just couldn't see it. I just couldn't see why. I ended up having to go onto YouTube, find a video of someone doing that particular section to see that they went into this kind of like tiny entrance in the side to progress. And there are a lot of things like that in the game that it just doesn't really tell you what you need to do. And I think for a game that's like mainly aimed at kids, and I don't think that it's as user-friendly as it could be. But when it was good, it was really good. You know, like I did enjoy the combat. I mostly did the combat as Luke because he's got a blaster, and that's infinitely more useful against most enemies than having like a lightsaber, because that's only kind of like really short range. So the blaster enemies I kind of like found were the better ones. And I liked how it kind of like kind of locked on to the enemies if you were facing in roughly the right direction. And I played up until the level after you rescue Leia in the Death Star, and you kind of like got to get out of the Death Star. And there are certain sections in the Death Star that you can only get to if you're a stormtrooper, but you can disguise yourself as a stormtrooper.
Right.
And there's one particular section with infinitely spawning enemies where you've got to grapple to certain places and then open the door with your stormtrooper disguise.
Without getting hit.
Without getting hit. And that was the problem. Because if you get hit, your disguise falls off. You've got to go back to the last room again, which is like a 30-second trip, and then go back to the first room again, try the door again. If you get hit from one of these infinitely spawning enemies, back again, head back, get your disguise, try the door again, get hit, head back, get your disguise. And it was at that point that I actually gave up, because I was just getting so frustrated, because it's like one hit will kind of like take your disguise off.
Yeah.
And the enemies do not stop coming.
And yeah, that...
I was just getting really pissed off with it.
Yeah, I remember that section being particularly annoying. There's another room in that level that I could not figure out the solution to. It took me forever to actually get it. I definitely know what you're talking about with things being frustrating and not being telegraphed. Like, there definitely should have been an arrow over the Millennium Falcon when you need to get into it, because I also took forever to find the door. So yeah, like I definitely understand your frustrations. I had a lot of the same frustrations, because a lot of my experience was with the original Lego Star Wars, which was the first three. So I actually hadn't played the levels for 4, 5, and 6 until probably 5 or 6 years ago. So this is only like my second time through those levels. And yeah, it's particularly in episode 4, there's a lot of really frustrating parts.
I mean, can I ask, when you first get Luke and Obi-Wan together on Tatooine, you go to a level where there's like these two big yaks, like at the start of the level. How long did it take you to figure out how to get to the other side?
I don't remember.
Took me about 10 minutes. I'd killed all the enemies. I had these two yaks, and there's a big gap in the middle, and could not for the life of me work out what to do. I tried to get on like every single platform. Tried from like various different angles and tried jumping across, couldn't get over this gap. And there's this kind of like little barrier that you need to blow up. The game doesn't tell you that you can blow it up. But that'll like cascade into a load of Lego bricks, and you can build a bridge with that. But
right.
That had me really frustrated for a long time. It's like I could not work that out at all. Most of the times where I was stuck was due to objects that can be blown up that I didn't know could be blown up.
Right. And like, if you've played the games enough, you know to just start blasting anything you see, but that doesn't help someone playing for the first time. So that's like, relying on the player knowing things is bad game design, because, you know, if you're not telegraphing and you're not explaining concepts to a new player, you're just expecting them to have played the previous one and know what's going on. That's not helpful. So yeah, I definitely get that.
That philosophy, I believe, kind of applies to the story as well. Whereas if you haven't experienced the films, you're not going to understand what's going on.
Yeah, that is, I think that's totally valid. It's hard for me because I had been watching the films for years before this game came out, but that is a criticism they've received in the past, is that, it's more for people who have seen the films and know what's going on rather than people coming to it for the first time.
I ought to test that theory with the Lego Indiana Jones films, because the Lego Indiana Jones games, because I've not watched the Indiana Jones films, which I know, shoot me. So I don't know the story of them. So I wonder if I would be able to follow the game, because I do have Lego Indiana Jones on 360, I think. I wonder if that would make sense to me playing that.
I don't know. That's a good test. Because I think I've seen most, if not all, of the things that they've covered in Lego. Because, I've seen Pirates, I've seen Indiana Jones, I've seen Marvel. Stuff like Lego Batman isn't specifically for a single version. It's just general Batman. So, yeah, it's... That's an interesting thought. Because, I mean, like I said, I've really enjoyed these. But again, I have that built-in investment. I know how the Lego games work, and I'm familiar with the stories. So I think you're absolutely right. I think someone who doesn't come in with that initial investment is not going to have the same experience.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to think that the Star Wars films contain a lot more dismemberment than they actually do.
Right.
Because you shoot an enemy, it just falls to bits.
Right. Now, I will say there is a new Lego Star Wars game out that covers all of the movies, including the sequels. It is the newer style, which has the voice acting, so I'm not sure what all changes they've made. I know they didn't just take these Lego levels and put them in the new game. Like, I think they remade the whole thing from the ground up. But, I mean, it's one of those things that, they're probably worth checking out. If you've got a way to check out one of these games, it's worth at least trying to see if you enjoy it. I would definitely suggest trying one that you're familiar with the content.
Yeah, and I mean, with the one that I played being like quite an early one, I'm assuming that later games do actually have better explained gameplay elements?
I would hope so. I think so. I want to say that the complete saga improves some things. I know it does. Like, so the vehicles weren't in the original game, and it adds vehicles and helmets to episodes 1, 2, and 3. And it also adds the bounty hunter and stormtrooper areas to 1, 2, and 3. So I think they did make improvements as they went along. I mean, I think Lego Star Wars 2 was like the second one they did. So it may be that later ones have a better first user experience. I know Lego Batman was a little obtuse when I played it, but that was also early. So like if you were to go to like Lego Pirates or Lego Lord of the Rings, those might be a little more new player friendly.
I didn't know they'd done Lord of the Rings. I know they've done kind of like more modern stuff, like Pirates and Harry Potter and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I didn't know they'd done Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, they did do Lord of the Rings. I don't remember if they did The Hobbit or not, but I know they did Lego Lord of the Rings. And then obviously they've got Marvel and DC and a bunch of other stuff. The Lego games are definitely very... It's another one of those where if it's your kind of thing, they're great, and there's a bunch of content for you. If it's not, then, you know, just give it a miss.
Yeah, well, like when it was good, I did really enjoy it. You know, when there wasn't like those obstacles in my way, and you know, I was having a lot of fun, like exploring and doing the combat and stuff like that. And I did like the fact that there's a lot of like replay value, because you can go back in free play mode and use different characters that you've unlocked to access different areas.
Yes.
You know, to get kind of like secrets and yeah, 100% and what have you. So there is a lot of content there.
I think the reason they made so many and were so successful is because they had a good foundation of gameplay and the replayability and all of that. And I think a lot of these issues were, you know, they were tolerated at the time, and you know, it's something that they hopefully improved on later on. I haven't played a lot of the later ones. Like, I haven't played the Harry Potter ones. I haven't gotten around to Lord of the Rings yet. And I haven't played the later Batman ones, and I haven't played any of the ones where they talk, but I would hope that they improved on that new user experience and, you know, made some of those things better.
One thing that I did really enjoy, though, that I do want to bring up, you know, if you're playing as Obi-Wan, you get your kind of like force powers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It is so much fun to just kind of like force push C-3PO away.
Yep.
It is, because he goes flying. That is a lot of fun to do.
So yeah, I think if that's all we've got, we'll take a quick break and then come back and finish up.
Okay.
Well, that's all we have for you this episode. I think we had a pretty decent couple of games here. You know, LucasArts is a good company that apparently is going to be making games again. I know at one point Disney had shuttered all of the gaming side, but then they started things back up, I think just this year or maybe last year. So we'll see if they come back and make more stuff.
What will be interesting to see is if they publish the Monkey Island game, Return to Monkey Island, because that is being developed by Tim Schafer's company, Double Fine. Tim Schafer was one of the first developers, one of the developers of the first game. And right. Double Fine is now owned by Microsoft.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I wonder if that will actually end up having the LucasArts tag, or if it will just be Microsoft.
I'm not sure. I don't know. I guess we'll wait and find out. But I guess until next time, all we really have left to say is goodbye. So goodbye.
Goodbye.